Well, welcome. Thanks for coming. My name is Darrell Holloway. I'm the College Republican Advisor, faculty staff advisor, and I'll be moderating the debate. I want to thank both gentlemen for being here. As you know, the debate will be the Hispanic Foundation of is it good or bad for America? That's the debate today. So what we're going to do is we're going to have a format. Each person will get an opening statement of 10 minutes apiece, and then there will be questions. Some of you may have postcards that you've been given to fill out, to give us some questions. We will have some of the members of the College Republicans picking those up. Please have those at the end of each aisle where you're sitting so we can get those. Those will come up after each after the opening statement, and I will read those questions, and each individual will get a chance to answer them and do a rebuttal. So, without further ado, we'll start with Jared Taylor. He will be the first person to do the opening statement. 10 minutes, sir.
Hello. First of all, I'd very much like to thank the University of Texas at Arlington and the campus Republicans for putting on this debate, which I believe considers some of the most important questions that our nation and the state of Texas faces today. The question before us, of course, is whether increased Hispanicization is good for the United States. My position is an unqualified no, that it is not good. And I'll approach this question in my 10-minute period from two directions. One is to paint you a kind of social statistical picture of the Hispanic population. And I believe that the result will be that this is a population to which it is not beneficial to add. The other part of my approach will be to discuss things that are less easy to quantify, namely the question of loyalty. To what extent do Hispanics, Mexican Americans in particular, genuinely feel American? This too is an entirely legitimate question. As far as the statistics are concerned, I do not make this recitation with pleasure, and I suspect that some of these statistics will cause pain to some of you in the audience, and I'm sorry about that. But these are serious questions, these are serious times, and they deserve unflinching and serious consideration. First of all, 23% of Hispanics in the United States are living in poverty. That's nearly a quarter. The per capita income of Hispanics is about half that of whites. The median net worth of Hispanics is about one-ninth. Now, we're told over and over again that immigrants do jobs, they will take jobs that Native Americans refuse to take. If that is the case, why is it that Hispanics are twice as likely as whites to be unemployed and 50% more likely to be on welfare? As far as crime is concerned, Hispanics are about three times more likely to commit violent crimes than white Americans, and about three times more likely to be incarcerated. Now, perhaps even more disturbing, compared to whites, Hispanics are no less than 19 times more likely to be members of youth gangs. Youth gangs are a serious and increasingly serious problem throughout the United States, and it's becoming overwhelmingly a Hispanic problem. We're told frequently that Hispanics have excellent family values. On the other hand, no fewer than 46% of the births to Hispanic women in this country are illegitimate. That's nearly half of all Hispanic babies are born without two parents. Sociologists agree practically unanimously that single parenthood is about the worst thing with which to start a baby off in life and leads to all sorts of problems in the future. Perhaps that's why Hispanics are three times more likely than whites and twice as likely as blacks to drop out of high school. And in the United States of the 21st century, what hope do you have as a high school dropout? Furthermore, illegal immigrants enter this country without any kind of health screening, and as a consequence, they've brought to the United States exotic diseases we never had in the past, and other diseases that we thought we had eradicated. Some of the examples are tuberculosis, plague, leprosy, typhoid. Yes, today we have thousands of people who suffer from these diseases. Practically every one of them arrived as an immigrant or caught the disease from an immigrant. Once again, Hispanics compared to whites are 3 times more likely to have syphilis or HIV/AIDS. As a consequence, Hispanics are large consumers of medical services, and yet 35% of Hispanics do not have medical insurance. That is 3 times the white rate. Why do they not have medical insurance? It's because they know that they can go to an emergency room and get free medical care, paid for by the rest of us. For some hospitals, this is an absolutely crushing burden. In California, since 1993, dozens of hospitals have shut down, completely shut down, because they could not stand the burden of paying the medical care for illegal aliens. Now, at the same time, Mexican and Latin American immigrants to this country, they send home more than $30 billion every year in remittances back to their home countries. The United States already has a serious balance of payments problem. And here we have $30 billion sucked out of our economy and scattered to the four winds in Mexico and Latin America. Now, people will often tell you the reason Hispanics do not have medical insurance, they can't afford it. Well, they can afford to send $30 billion out of the country. $30 billion, ladies and gentlemen, buys a lot of medical insurance. Now, let me leave you on the statistical front here with one final statistic. And that is the Center for Immigration Studies, a think tank in Washington, D.C., has calculated that the average adult immigrant from Mexico will consume more than $55,000 in social government services than he will pay in taxes over his lifetime. $55,000 per person for millions of immigrants. Who pays that $55,000? That's the rest of us. We pay that $55,000. So, let me ask you, the United States is not a national charity. The United States is a nation that has to be concerned about its welfare. For years, we have been fighting poverty, and yet we're importing poor people. We fight crime, or at least we claim to be fighting crime, and yet we import people who are likely to commit crimes. We claim to be fighting school failure, and yet we import people who are more than likely than any other ethnic group in the country to drop out of high school. We claim to be fighting disease, and yet we have all sorts of exotic diseases we never had before. So the question is, should there be more Hispanics in the United States? I'm sorry, no. Why should we add to this population that is increasingly a burden upon the rest of us? As for the question of loyalty to the United States, I would argue that, aside entirely from this dismal demographic picture that I've been obliged to paint for you, Mexicans in particular are the worst candidates for a U.S. citizenship. Why is that? Mexico is the only country in the world that has an often expressed, passionately expressed demand, a claim on American territory. The majority of Mexicans believe that the territory that changed hands after the Mexican-American War rightly belongs to them. That means they don't respect our sovereignty. Does it make sense to import millions of people from a neighboring country who did not respect your sovereignty, whose loyalty lies across the border, whose goal may be, in fact, to dismember the United States and detach part of it and add it to a different country or make it independent? This isn't just pure fantasy. There's an organization that many of you may be familiar with called MECHA. That is a Spanish acronym that stands for the Mexican Student Movement for Aztlan. They're very clear about what their goals are. They wish to detach the southwestern part of the United States, expel all the non-Hispanics, and make it an independent country. They even have a name for it already. It's to be called Aztlan. MECHA is an organization that has chapters in virtually every university in Texas, in California, and throughout the West. It has chapters in many high schools. The motto of MECHA is, for the race, everything. For those outside the race, nothing. Their plan to expel all non-Hispanics means that those of you in this audience who are not Hispanics are potentially targets for what we call ethnic cleansing. Now, once again, is it wise to add to a population if even a minority of its members in the United States wish to ethnically cleanse those who are different from themselves? Let me tell you about Charles Trujillo. He is a professor of Chicano studies at the University of New Mexico. He foresees a sovereign Hispanic state in the southwestern part of the United States as, quote, an inevitability. He tells us it would include all of California, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, and southern Colorado.
That's time, sir.
Well, let me just give him about 20 seconds, please. You're going to give me 1 minute more.
Okay, go ahead.
He says that... That it should be brought about by any means necessary, and that his job is to form a cadre of intellectuals to help bring this about. Thank you.
Dr. Gutierrez?
Thank you. I'm pleased that everyone is here on this muggy, kind of wintry afternoon. This is a low-risk environment. It's a campus university. Here is where professors profess. That's what we do. And students listen and learn and have to understand the things that we say. Understand, not accept. Understand. This is a stretching of the minds place. So this afternoon, I welcome you, Mr. Taylor, to our campus. We're going to help stretch these minds. You've done a brilliant job here of making the statistical argument a severe indictment. I wish that you would have added some comparative statistics wherever you got those. So how we stand with whites, for example. And sometime during this debate, I hope you do tell us who the real white people are. But I think the indictment that you gave about the condition of Hispanics in the United States is your indictment, Mr. Taylor. We have not been in charge, Mr. Taylor. We have been the victims. We have been segregated, oppressed, and ruled in this country for centuries. You get results from what you produce. Now, the topic is a good topic. Hispanization of the United States. Good or bad? Well, there's some underlying assumptions here. Whose United States is this? Whose planet is this? I would think that in this 21st century, we would have gotten away from the law of the jungle, where that 800-pound gorilla can sit wherever they want to, or that 2-ton elephant can walk over everybody and anybody anytime they please. I would think that we would all pledge in this 21st century to leave this world a better place, that we would all get together and work together and live together in harmony. But I guess we still have to deal with the law of the jungle, the racist in a suit. Like Mr. Taylor. The Hispanization of the United States is a done deal, Mr. Taylor. But apparently those 16 years you spent in Japan atrophied you in terms of history lessons that you never had. You know, some 40,000 years ago, our ancient grandmothers, the Olmecas and the Mayas, were here with great civilizations. And Arnold Toynbee has pointed out to us several times that civilizations have decayed from within, as opposed to from without. We also know that developed countries today appear at the top. At one time were undeveloped. And the spiral is this way. It's not linear, and it's not unidirectional to the supremacy of the white race. The Spaniards came at a time when perhaps your ancestors were in caves eating raw meat. And they created civilizations. Great civilizations. Sometime around 1492, the Europeans came to plunder and pillage and rape and destroy, and they did. Most of them were Spanish and Portuguese. And then other Europeans came. For the next century and a half, the map face of the United States bears that Spanish imprint. You go all the way up to Alaska, Valdez. The city of Alaska is named for the Marine Minister that commissioned that exploration drive. It's not the tanker ship that drunken pilot spilled out of oil. All the way down California, Washington, Oregon, Alta California, because there's a Baja California, we we have been dismembered. All those places are San Francisco, San Jose, San Diego, California, and we have a governor that speaks it properly. California, Alta California. On the eastern side, you're Jamestown. You're Jamestown. 68 years prior to the founding of Jamestown was San Miguel de Guadalupe. There are over 33,000 places in the United States that had a Spanish name. If we were to remove that Hispanization that already occurred, one third of your land would be gone, Mr. Taylor. The Western movies would probably be silent movies. And in around 1803-5, when Napoleon III was emperor of Europe, he placed his brother on the throne in Spain, Joseph. And Joseph gave to his brother Napoleon, like a good older brother should do for a younger brother who's the emperor, the Louisiana Territory, which in turn was then sold to President Jefferson at the time. So that brought these persons to the border of Texas, Coahuila, and Mexico. Mexico was born in 1810. And Mexico at that time said to anyone who would come, lawful immigrants, that you're welcome to come, provided you're Catholic, provided you're loyal to Mexico, and you bring no slaves. That's still in the Mexican Constitution in Article 2. Mexico has prohibited slavery since that time. Well, these legal immigrants came and got lots of land. But then the illegal aliens came from Kentucky, from Tennessee, from Georgia, perhaps from Virginia, perhaps your ancestors, Mr. Taylor. These illegal aliens, like the pilgrims, were also illegal. Came, and like the Europeans, the Spanish and Portuguese predominantly then, to pillage and plunder and steal. We know how Thanksgiving was repaid for the Native Americans. We know who was brought here in slaves. We know the wars against Mexico and Mexicans. It was very difficult and very painful for Mexicans to be Mexicans for the longest time. And yes, this land was stolen in Texas. In 1846, the rest of the Southwest was stolen. Sovereignty is where the flags lie. Everyone here knows about sovereignty, Mr. Taylor. We have a theme park that tells us all the flags, all the sovereign flags that are flown over Texas. But that doesn't give you a right to steal my rancho, or mi casa, or my culture, or mi lengua. Now, Article 10 of that constitution, or that treaty that ended the hostility, protected property rights and cultural rights. And we don't have to get into all that big debate. But we just need to understand one thing. A cultural right, a human right, is your right to be you. Your right to be you. This man says that we're inferior. When he sees me, and he sees others that are dark-skinned, he says we're different and deficient. This is what I cannot stand back and not answer. That's why I accept this debate, and I welcome you here. We are the future of the United States. This is not a white country. It is not going to be a white country, and we will paint this White House brown.
Thank you. All right. Now we will have. Okay, let's calm down, please. Let's stand straight. We're gonna do. I'm glad for it's back. I gotta hold the debate here. So we will do 3-minute rebuttals. 3 minutes to Mr. Taylor.
It seems to me that Mr. Gutierrez has some misconception as to what the title of this debate is. Is Hispanicization good for America? I was listening very carefully, and I hope all of you were too. He didn't come up with a single reason. Not one reason as to why it's good for America. I hope you were paying attention. I think it's because not even he can think of one. All he is telling you.
Hey, can we hold your applause?
Yes.
Hold your applause.
I think in a debate, one holds one's applause until all the remarks are finished. That's one of those gringo rules that some people find difficult to understand. Please hold your applause.
Seriously, that's an overreaction. Let's both talk, party talk.
No, not a single explanation or idea as to why it's good for the United States. He tells you that Mexicans have been segregated and repressed. Well, why is it that the most recent poll done in Mexico suggests that fully half of all Mexicans would come to the United States if they had a chance? Is that because they want to come and be segregated and repressed? No, it's because they live in a nation that they have made a mess of, and they wish to come to a country that works. Now, Mr. Gutierrez has also called me a racist. Well, Mr. Gutierrez, I hope he calls me more and worse names, because when you're reduced to name calling, it means you don't have an argument. Calling people names is the most graceless way of admitting you've lost the argument. So hope he calls me yet more colorful and wonderful names. He has also suggested to you that somehow, without the Spanish language or the Spanish people, one third of English would disappear. Well, that's news to me. I think we have a marvelous language, a marvelous literature, a marvelous heritage. Very little of it depends ever so slightly on Spanish. Now, at some later point, we can talk about this Mexican-American war, which Mr. Gutierrez has described as stolen territory. Well, I'll just give you a foretaste of what we might discuss by putting out to you that Mexico was itching to fight that war. Mariano Paredes, who was the dictator at the time, he very much wanted to fight because he thought he was going to get Texas back. And not just Texas. He was going to occupy Louisiana, Mississippi. He was itching for a fight because he could expand his territory.
It's time to thank you. Dr. Gutierrez,
yes.
You have 3 minutes.
The second prong of Mr. Taylor's original opening statement had to do with loyalty. You know, not a single person with a Spanish surname has ever been charged, indicted, or convicted, much less of treason to the United States. Do you know, Mr. Taylor, that the only terrorist that came, at least associated with 9/11, came to Canada, not the southern border? Do you know, Mr. Taylor, that the greatest number of Congressional Medal of Honor winners, which is the highest award for military bravery beyond the call of duty, in the hands of an ethnic group such as ourselves, in this case, Latinos, is held by our community? We serve proudly, Mr. Taylor. You know, I was born in Crystal City, Texas. And when it came my time, I served in the United States Army. Did you drive the Dodge? Were you ever in the military? I think I have a right to criticize my country and my society because I have stood and defended it against worse than you. And I will continue to do so. I also want to tell you that in this particular situation where we are with demography, why don't you really tell us what the statistics mean, that we are such bad people and criminally bent and promiscuous? Don't you think that it's in the gene pool? Why don't you tell us, people, what you really think? Thank you.
Okay, now we're going to take the opportunity to let the audience speak. We have your questions up here. Each individual will get 2 minutes to answer each question, then 2 minute rebuttal from each. We will start with Dr. Gutierrez first. The first question is, with Mexicans seen as cheap labor, do you feel that all Mexicans as a whole will be seen as a second-class citizen in the near future?
That's always been. We don't have to wait for the near future. When you criminalize someone, you make them totally vulnerable and exploitable. And we don't have to look at Mexican immigration. We can just simply look at the borderland from San Diego, California, all the way down to Brownsville, Texas. Those border counties, which have been under the jurisdiction of the United States, and they have been in charge since 1848, have had chronic unemployment. is the most underdeveloped area there is in the United States, in cases worse than Appalachia. There is a theory that suggests that underdevelopment is development. That if I take from you, either by hook or crook, I will get richer, and you will remain poor. Thank you.
Once again, we find that Mr. Gutierrez has refrained from coming up with one single reason why it's good for the United States to become dispensized. I suspect we'll be waiting all afternoon for him to come up with a reason. We'll see. Now that he's been challenged twice, he must be racking his brains for something, something that's good for America. Well, let's hear it eventually. As far as the second-class citizens are concerned, yes, indeed, there is a problem. There's a problem due to the fact that other immigrants generally, after they've been in the United States for three generations, they achieve at the level of the majority. Asians, for example, achieve at an even higher level than the majority. Mexicans do not. Hispanics do not. Even after they've been here several generations, Hispanics are more likely to drop out of school, less likely to attend college, less likely to earn the median wage. So, especially those who feel utterly alienated from American society, those who are loyal to Mexico, they will become a secondary underclass. And once again, is this good for America? No, it's not good for America. And if I have just a few seconds left, I'd like to point out on the whole question of loyalty. Just a few months after September 11, 2001, at a time when real Americans were feeling extremely patriotic, the Pew Hispanic Center asked Mexican Americans, what do they consider themselves first and foremost? 55% said Mexican. 25% said Latino or Hispanic. Only 8% said, first and foremost, America. Well, good for that 8%, but 8% is not good enough. People who, American citizens, mind you, not just resident aliens, not illegal aliens, people who are American citizens consider themselves first and foremost Mexican.
Time. Dr. Gutierrez, you have a 2-minute rebuttal on that, if you'd like.
Yes, I sure would like. We have labels today that didn't exist 15, 20 years ago, Hispanic, Latino, and so on. And Mr. Taylor would like for us to be responsible for that. I already pointed out to him and to the audience, we haven't been in charge. We're imposed these labels. Now, if you have a problem with how we answer interviews or surveys or what we call ourselves, I suggest you take it up with the Office of Management and Budget. They direct the United States Department of Commerce, who runs the Census Bureau, to create the census form that gives us four options for race. We have to pick whether we're black or white or yellow or red, and then we've got to pick another 126 nationalities, none of which is American, Mr. Taylor. We are excluded from within and from without. Your government.
Can I reply? Do we have to wait?
No, next question.
All right.
It's all right.
Very good.
Not a problem. Next question. If any other country proposed to build this wall, in quotes, what would your feelings be, Mr. Taylor?
If any other country?
If any other country.
I think every nation, every sovereign nation has absolute right to determine who comes into that country and who does not. That is an obvious expression of a nation's sovereignty. The idea that somehow the United States, and only the United States, is supposed to give up that right, that's an astonishing double standard. Look at Mexico. Mr. Gutierrez tells us, we've been here for 40,000 years, from Alaska to Tierra del Fuego. Well, if you're a Guatemalan and you want to cross the border into Mexico, good luck. Good luck. They don't believe in this, we can go anywhere, we've been here 40,000 years stuff. All the borders in Latin America. You think anybody can just traipse across whenever he feels like it? Absolutely not. Now, the proposal that came in the American House of Representatives to build a wall, do you know how the Mexicans responded? The foreign minister of Mexico, Mr. Derbez, he said, we will not permit this. Just imagine that. Imagine that you have a neighbor next door, and you propose, I think I'm going to put a lock on my door. He says, no, no, no. I will not permit that you put a lock on your door. Now, would you call that nerve, or would you not? The Mexicans are telling us, no. they will not permit us to determine who comes into our country. Comparisons with the Berlin Wall, for example, are absolutely nuts. Those are people who don't understand the difference between the lock on your door and the lock on a jail cell. The Berlin Wall was to keep their own people in. A wall on the border is to protect our sovereignty. It's a completely different thing. And any nation that sees fit to do that, by all means, God bless them. And I hope it is built, and I hope it's effective. And I have every reason to think that it will be.
Sir, Dr. Pierre,
well, I hope we don't see that wall. But if it does come to pass, I wouldn't be surprised if Cheney's ex Halliburton gets the contract. Walls, as Robert Frost tells us, you know, fences make good neighbors. They keep people in and keep people out, as you pointed out, Mr. Taylor. We've had, since the Roman times, the Wall of Hadrian, that didn't work. The China Wall, the Great Wall of China, that didn't work. And the Berlin Wall as well, that didn't work. We've got blockades of Cuba, that doesn't work either. And we have NAFTA now, which is an economic wall. We allow under NAFTA and CAFTA and a few other trade agreements, we allow the free flow of capital and goods, but not labor. And labor is what drives this engine. The United States historically has needed labor, all kinds of immigrants. That's why that Statue of Liberty is there. That's why this nation is a nation of immigrants. The only thing that has changed since after the First World War is that they run on European immigrants, and that's the resentment Mr. Taylor has. He ain't got no more. The vitamin now is coming from Africa, and from Asia, and from Latin America. And that's why we are the future of this country.
Mr. Taylor?
Yes. I'm still waiting for a reason why Hispanicization is good for America. I guess I just don't see one coming. Now, we've heard about the Statue of Liberty. Well, that's an old chestnut, isn't it? Do anyone of you really know what the Statue of Liberty is all about? It was given by the nation of France, the American people, at the centennial of the American independence. Its title is Liberty Enlightening the World. In other words, it is to be a beacon to the outside. It was never set up as an idea somehow that it's supposed to welcome the huddled masses, the wretched refuse of their teeming shores. That was tacked on years later. That is liberty enlightening the world. It's not welcoming the huddled masses and the wretched refuse. Now, Mr. Gutierrez tells you that he hasn't been in charge. Hispanics haven't been in charge. And that's why they're poor. That's why they're illegitimate. Because people like me have been in charge. Well, he's wrong. Hispanics have been completely in charge for hundreds of years south of the border. And look what they've got. He says they haven't been in charge. Where they are in charge, Mexicans are trying to get out as best they can to come to this country where they're not in charge. Now, why would that possibly be? It's because they know they can live a better life here. Mr. Gutierrez tells me walls don't work. The current walls, only a few miles of them, have been working brilliantly. More and more people have been having to go round and round, far out into the desert to get across. It's much more difficult to cross. In fact, every year, the tragedy is that 200 or 300 people die trying to make that passage. Do you think that if there were no walls, if there were never any deaths, if it were a piece of cake to walk across, somehow more people wouldn't come? Of course, walls are effective. That's why people build them.
Time.